Welcome back, everybody, into Bill's Chat. I am Josh McCarty. A little bit of a different show this week, as one, I'm flying solo. That's okay. We're going to have just a good time here without Luca. He's what would we call this in the NFL terms? He's a late scratch. He got injured during warmups, kind of like Evan Ingram did for the Jaguars last week. He was doing fine, and then he got a massive headache late in the day. But the other thing that's unique about this show is generally our Sunday night record, Monday upload podcast is a game recap. And that is not the case this week, as the Bills are set to take on the Jacksonville Jaguars tonight at 7:30 p.m. at Highmark Stadium, the 2-2 Bills against the 0-2 Jaguars. So this edition of Bills Chat is going to be more of a game preview. But where I want to start with this episode, I, like many of you, took in all of the NFL action today. As I'm recording this, the Chiefs and the Falcons are just about at halftime. The Falcons are leading 14-10. But I want to start with what we're seeing around the league and what that means for the Bills tonight. I'm going to say tonight because you're listening to this on Monday. Tonight when they take on the Jaguars. Just this week alone, you had the New York Giants go to Cleveland and get an upset victory 21-15 over the Browns in a game where the Giants fumbled the opening kickoff. The next play, the Browns threw a touchdown pass. And from that point on, it was all Giants? New York Giants? What in the world? Bo Nix, the laughing stock of the NFL the first 2 weeks of the season, and the Denver Broncos go to Tampa Bay and blow out the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That probably killed whatever was left of the survivor pools after last week we saw the Las Vegas Raiders go to Baltimore and get a win. What was another devastating one? The Falcons winning against Philadelphia. The Colts beating Malik Willis. That was a surprise, especially considering what we thought of Malik Willis at the time. That might have been changed now that we have two more games worth of data points. The Saints at the time blowing out the Cowboys in Dallas was a result that not a lot of folks saw coming. And then the Vikings last week beating the Niners was a game that a lot of people didn't see coming. Speaking of those Niners, they lost today to the Rams, who were playing without Cooper Kupp. And the Rams were playing without Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua. And they still have a banged up offensive line, and they still won the game. Where am I going with all this? I'm not just reading the scores. We don't know anything. September football, I think, at this point in time, has become extended preseason. These teams are starting to treat preseason like it's an annoyance. You saw that even in the Bills case, Josh Allen attempted 3 passes in the entire preseason, and you're seeing rust. You're seeing a lot of injuries, and I think that's because of the fact that these guys are not allowed to play as hard as they used to in training camp. NFLPA limits how much work these guys can do together in the offseason. They're treating preseason like a nuisance instead of a method to get ramped up for the season. And then they hit the ground running, and their bodies are not ready. And you're seeing a laundry list of injuries, and you're seeing teams rusty, and you're seeing some very random results out there. My point here is this. I am as excited as anybody about the 2-0 Buffalo Bills. I enjoyed every minute with the exception of the point in time when Tua got hurt, because no human being with a working heart enjoyed that, because that was hard to watch. I enjoyed every minute of the Bills thrashing the Dolphins last week. But I think we have to pull back and realize that as excited as we are about the Buffalo Bills, as cool as it has been to see guys like Cam Lewis and Jamarcus Ingram and Baylen Spector step in to roles we did not envision them having, and not only play, but play well and thrive, we still have to accept the fact that we may not know how good they are and really how good this team is. And we have to have an open mind to all of that as we navigate through the early portion of this season, because We are seeing upsets happen left and right. Teams that we are positive or good are getting blown out by teams that we are positive or bad on their own home field. And now we're going to talk about an 0-2 Jacksonville Jaguars team coming to Buffalo as a 5-point favorite, as a 5-point underdog when Buffalo has had 10 days rest. And we're going to go through all the matchups tonight. I'm going to tell you advantages I like for the Bills. I'm going to tell you where I think the Bills can attack this defense. There's a lot of places where I think that the Bills have the X's and O's advantage. I think on paper, the Bills are the better team, particularly when you factor in some of the injuries that the Jaguars are dealing with. I understand that Matt Milano, Taron Johnson, and Terrell Bernard are out for the Bills, but the Bills have shown the ability to weather that storm and have solid depth. The Jaguars have not shown that. And that, to me, is a huge X factor in this game. But I think we all have to be open to the reality that everything that we're going to talk about tonight that's going to lead us to believing that the Bills should win this game, it's September NFL football. We don't know anything. There is a world where the Jaguars come into Buffalo on Monday Night Football and blow out the Bills. You think I sound crazy? What do you think a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan was thinking 30 minutes before kickoff when Bo Nix and the Denver Broncos were in town? They were thinking it was about to be a three-hour party, and it was anything but that. I'm not trying to get you guys into a bad mood about this game. I feel good about this game, but I think that it's important that we keep what September football is in perspective. It is these teams trying to learn themselves and navigate through the most random part of the schedule. And the goal here is to survive and advance, because the teams that we see on the field right now are not going to be the same teams we see on the field in late October, early November, and then into December. There's going to be obviously injuries, but even more so than that, these teams are going to gel together. They're going to have that identity. They're going to figure out what they do well, what they don't do well. And you're really going to see the best versions of those teams. But the teams that can't weather the storm in September, that pile up losses against teams that they thought they should beat, are the ones that are going to be playing from behind in this playoff race. It is a marathon. There's 17 games now. But what you don't want to do is pile up 2, 3, or 4 losses before Halloween that you had chalked up to wins. And all of a sudden, come Thanksgiving, you're looking at the standings and you're 2 games behind and you have to play perfect football like the Bills did last year just to have a shot to make the playoffs. So far, so good for these Bills. They're 2-0. They have a division win on the road, which is chef's kiss perfect. They survived an Arizona Cardinals game that at the time, I think some folks out there thought was a less than impressive outing from the Bills. I think we've since learned that the Cardinals are probably better than a lot of folks thought they were. They did lose today to Detroit, but that's not overly surprising. But everything we're about to talk about tonight, just keep in mind, we really don't know anything. And the most important thing for the Bills, one, no more important injuries. We've had enough of those already. Arguably losing your 3 best defensive players before week 3 is even kicked off. Although really good news on Taron Johnson and Terrell Bernard. Neither of those guys look to be going to injured reserve, which means I think Taron Johnson could be back as early as next week against the Ravens. And Terrell Bernard could be back in a couple weeks down the line after that, maybe looking at that Jets game or the Texans game, which would just be massive for this team. But this Bills team, I still don't know if we know what they're good at. What was that Dolphins game? From one perspective, maybe the right perspective, it was a defensive masterclass by Sean McDermott. I subscribe to that. When you look at the fact that Sean McDermott went into that game without Matt Milano, without Taron Johnson, and on the first drive, he loses his team captain, Terrell Bernard, the last standing good linebacker that many of us think is on this team, and he still holds the Dolphins to 1 offensive touchdown. That's a masterclass by Sean McDermott. But I think when you look under the hood of that game, I don't know that the Bills did anything tricky. I don't know that the Bills did anything that really threw off the Dolphins. I think what the Bills did in that spot was what we see a lot of teams doing around the league right now, playing back, playing the too high shell, which for some reason people are talking about that like this is some brand new invention in the NFL. Mel Kiper just ruined the too high shell for all of us. But they forced the Dolphins to be patient on offense. The Dolphins are a big strike offense. They want to gash you with big plays. They don't want to paper cut you to death. And the Bills were content to give up 6 to 8 yard runs to Mostert and A-Chain. Not Mostert. Mostert didn't play, excuse me. To A-Chain and to Jeff Wilson and to give up the underneath stuff and force Tua to get impatient. And we saw that on the first interception of the game. He forced it into a tight window. It should have probably been caught, but it was a tight enough window that the ball bounces up in the air and Ingram catches it. Second interception, he throws downfield. Nobody's open. You can make the argument that it was a bad route by the receiver, but it's right into the chest of Christian Benford. And then the interception where Ingram returns it for a touchdown, at that point, Tua is pressing. But to me, that game could just as easily be explained as the Bills just came in and let the Dolphins beat themselves, which is a fantastic strategy if you're playing a team that you think is going to do that. But I don't know that that necessarily means that the Bills have unlocked this suffocating defense that's going to be a strength of the team week in and week out. I think there's plenty of reasons to go back to the first two quarters against the Arizona Cardinals and really wonder how this team is going to be able to hold up against good offense. They did adjust. They figured it out, and they really shut down the Cardinals in the second half. But there's still some concerns out there. There's a small sample size of football right now. Let's get to these Jacksonville Jaguars. 0-2 football team. Week one, they absolutely, positively gave a game away to the Miami Dolphins. They're up 17-7, middle of the third quarter. Travis Etienne is walking into the end zone, not walking, running, you know what I mean. On the 1 yard line, Javon Holland comes in for the tackle, knocks the ball out. Miami recovers. 7-point swing. Very next play, 80 yard touchdown pass to Tyreek Hill. 14-point swing. But I'll tell you, you oversimplify that game by boiling it down to that moment. You let a lot of people off the hook in that game by just pinning it on the Travis Etienne fumble. The Dolphins still made their mistakes. There was a Jason Sanders missed field goal there late in the game that should have given Jacksonville life. What you saw from the Jacksonville Jaguars after the fumble by Etienne was an offense go into the tank. Trevor Lawrence could not move the chains after that. There was ample opportunity to regain momentum, recontrol that game. Yeah, you just got punched in the mouth. That was a haymaker, an absolute haymaker of momentum, but you still had the lead. You still had the ball. And the Jaguars showed their immaturity. They showed that they were a team that wasn't quite ready for a big moment. And the Dolphins, to their credit, made them pay. And Jason Saunders walks it off with a field goal at the buzzer. The next week, the Jaguars go home and take on the Cleveland Browns with Deshaun Watson, a quarterback that I think many of us at this point think is absolutely washed. And Deshaun Watson puts together a pretty efficient day, 22 of 34, 186 yards. Jerome Ford goes 7 for 64 on the ground. And the Jaguars walk out of Cleveland with an 18-13 victory. My biggest issue with these Jaguars right now is I don't know what they're trying to be on offense. What they have doesn't make sense to me. And it, to me, it starts with the quarterback. I have never been a huge Trevor Lawrence guy. And let me explain that the best way I can. When Trevor Lawrence came into the league, he was talked about in the same breath of like Andrew Luck, where this is a guy that you plan 2 years ahead of time to set yourself up to draft. When the Jets had the number one draft pick and they go into LA late in the year and just randomly beat the Rams, and cost themselves the number one draft pick and Trevor Lawrence, it was like a catastrophic moment for them because we all thought that Trevor Lawrence was this knight in shining armor, savior, gift from the gods to whatever team got him. And to play the full story out for the Jets, they wound up with Zach Wilson. He was horrendous. But I think through his career so far, Trevor Lawrence has never been a great quarterback. I think Trevor Lawrence has been kind of like Dak Prescott-ish, where he's good enough that you're afraid to move off of him. Because when you don't have a quarterback in this league, you don't have a shot. You have a zero shot. But I don't think Trevor Lawrence has ever proven capable of consistently going toe-to-toe with Josh Allen, Mahomes, Rodgers. I mean, who are the elite quarterbacks? Does anybody even know anymore? I mean, maybe Stroud. I don't know. The league is so wild. I feel like Allen and Mahomes are the only things that are like sure things at this point. I'll still give Burrow the benefit of the doubt. But Trevor Lawrence has never proven capable of doing that. And here he is as a number one draft pick coming into the league. He's good enough that every time he's up for a new deal, he's always going to get max money. So you don't get any kind of cost benefit of having him as your quarterback. And you're always kind of playing with a shorter hand when you have him and you're going against these elite teams. And, you know, Trevor Lawrence, to his credit, is 2-0 against the Bills. Two of the craziest games you'll ever remember. Obviously, the London game last year, which was just a nightmare for all of us watching. The Bills losing Daquan Jones and Matt Milano. Milano for the season, Daquan Jones for almost the rest of the season. And then they lost a game that many of us feared days leading up to it because of the travel plan and the NFL basically experimenting with jet lag. And the Jaguars being there for 2 weeks and the Bills being there for 2 days. Thanks, NFL. Glad we could be your test dummies on that one. And then the random game, was it 2002 or 2001 when they go down to Jacksonville and don't even score a touchdown? The, oh, wow, Josh Allen and Josh Allen game. Like, that was annoying. That was just a random, really bad game. But, you know, I never got the sense watching these games that Jacksonville was the better team. And the larger data that I look at, I don't think Jacksonville is the better team. Their offense doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I think Trevor Lawrence is probably fine. He's not great, but he can run your offense. But when I look at the weapons they've assembled around him, again, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. They went out and spent good money to get Gabe Davis. Well, everybody listening to this show knows what Gabe Davis is. He is a deep ball, take the top off your defense threat. He's a good run blocker, but if you ask him to do anything in the intermediate area of the field, it's kind of a dice roll. The route tree is not his strength. Great hands are not his strength. So he's kind of a one-trick pony. I love Gabe Davis. The Bills got great value for a fourth-round pick. I'm not going to sit here and rehash the Gabe Davis argument, but I think he was quite a bit over his skis as the number two receiver in an offense that was very throw-heavy for the Bills. And the Jaguars going out and signing him. And then in April, drafting an excellent prospect in Brian Thomas Jr. But the problem is, for 2024, Brian Thomas Jr. comes into the league with virtually the same strengths as Gabe Davis. Better than Gabe Davis, faster than Gabe Davis, better hands than Gabe Davis, but they're kind of interchangeable. They both go deep, great. They both struggle with the rest of the route tree. Brian Thomas Jr. is a first-year player. He has tremendous upside. I would bet on this kid to become a star. Absolutely, I would bet on this kid to become a star. But we're talking about September 23rd, 2024. And the game he brings to the table in this game is still a guy that's figuring out the underneath stuff, inconsistent hands, and can take the top off your defense. Well, when you have two of those guys out there, who's working the underneath? You don't really have to dedicate two guys to take away Gabe Davis underneath like you would if it was Devontae Adams or Chris Olave or things like that. But It's not. You have two guys that are very similar. It's redundant. So then you look at someone like Evan Engram, not playing in this game. Okay. They've had trouble getting the ball to Christian Kirk. Christian Kirk has had a really down season. I have the Jaguars stats up here. I may have just brought them down. Let me see if I can find them. Christian Kirk, for the season, has two catches for 29 yards. You can take a look at that. He has one first down. Christian Kirk is their primary slot receiver. He has two catches for 29 yards and one first down. I think his production will go up. I expect Christian Kirk to be a big factor in this game tonight, primarily because Evan Engram is out. But the larger point there is this comes back to Trevor Lawrence. What Christian Kirk does well is attack the middle of the field, the short underneath stuff. And Trevor Lawrence this year has been horrendous underneath. Horrendous. He is 30th out of 32 in completion percentage, and his yards per completion is dead last in the entire sport. And we all looked at this Jacksonville Jaguars team. I say we all, like, maybe you're the exception, but like sports fans in general spent all offseason looking at Josh Allen's weapons saying he needs more. He needs more. What are we doing? He needs more. Did anybody say that about Trevor Lawrence? You got Travis Etienne. You have Evan Engram. Not tonight. You have Christian Kirk. You have Gabe Davis. And you have Brian Thomas Jr. from the draft. Like, that is plenty of weapons. But when you look at what they all mix together like, you have two redundant receivers, Brian Thomas Jr., this version of him. You have a tight end that's out. And now you have Trevor Lawrence who can't hit the underneath. So what does that mean for Christian Kirk? And then you go to the running game. I like Travis Etienne. Travis Etienne was a guy that I was actually high on the Bills potentially drafting back in that draft when they ended up getting Greg Rousseau. Thank you, Bills, for being smarter than me, because boy, oh boy, has Greg Rousseau been fantastic this season. It's nice to see him healthy. But Travis Etienne, to me, is a bit of a fish out of water in this Doug Peterson system. Doug Peterson likes to run a lot of inside zone, and I think Travis Etienne is much more of a better fit of like a wide zone offense, like you see from the Niners and the Dolphins, where you can really utilize your speed. It's that one cut, giddy up, go. Really, the better back for their system, I think, is Tank Bigsby. The way he plays, the physicality he brings to the position, the decisiveness he has in getting to the hole. I think Tank Bigsby is the preferred back of the Jaguars. I think you've kind of seen them skew toward that. He got an injury last week. He's questionable for this game. And Tank Bigsby would be a big loss for them if he can't play in this game. But that, to me, is just another problem I have with this offense is you have some names and you have some guys that everybody knows. People around the league know who Gabe Davis is. You don't have to be a fan of the Bills or the Jaguars to know who Gabe Davis is. People that follow the draft know who Brian Thomas Jr. is. If you play fantasy football, you know who Christian Kirk is. You know who Travis Etienne is. You know, if you follow the league at all, you know who Trevor Lawrence is, but you mix it all together and what do you come up with? I don't think you come up with something that's where the sum of the parts ends up being something that adds up to what you want it to add up to. I don't know that it mixes well together. It's not great ingredients. It doesn't make a good meal. Maybe on their own, the ingredients are fine, but mixed together, it leaves a little something to be desired. Now, they're certainly capable of coming in here and putting together a good offensive game plan and exploiting this beat-up Bills defense. But my first key to the game for the Bills is, hey, Bills, don't change anything you've been doing. The last two opponents we've seen the Bills face, the Bills have been perfectly content to give up rushing yards, give up short passes, and take away deep passes. I would do the exact same thing. I'm not giving Jacksonville a cheap deep pass to Gabe Davis. I'm not giving Jacksonville a cheap deep pass to Brian Thomas Jr. Brian Thomas Jr. might go ahead and take a deep pass, even if you don't give it to him, because his ball skills are out of this world. He could be one-on-two with Rasul Douglas and Taylor Rapp, and you might love it when the ball's in the air, and then when the ball comes down, you're like, wait, did the guy in the white uniform catch that ball? Because he's pretty good. That's just one of those where you tip your cap and say, okay, good play. Let's go on to the next one, but let's not give them anything cheap. Let's make them earn it because they've been inefficient underneath. They don't have guys that run a good route tree, and their quarterback has been anything but consistent to this point in his career. So I expect the Bills to give this Jaguars team a healthy dose of that. It's going to be a reunion in Buffalo. Mitch Morse, the starting center for the Jacksonville Jaguars. We already mentioned Gabe Davis. Those are two guys that were captains for the Bills last year. Curious to see what kind of ovation those guys get. I think from the outset, those guys will both get cheered, but you know how sports goes. Like, we love you until you give us a reason not to. And if the Jaguars get out to a big lead in this game and Gabe Davis is a reason be of that, like, I don't expect Bills fans to be cheering for him in the fourth quarter. So that'll be something to track. I think we also have to remember that Smoot for the Bills, who hasn't played this year, spent 7 years in Jacksonville, and he is a massive addition to the Bills' defensive line. Smoot and Solomon are both healthy and good to go this game. I am not convinced just yet that Javon Solomon will be active for this game. I hope he is, because I think, like what Von Miller has done, he gives them a different dynamic as a third down rusher. But unless he has a strong presence on special teams, I don't know that the Bills know that he gives them anything more than Casey Tuhill, who might be there for special teams. I would love to be wrong. I would love to see what Solomon can do in real time. The guy led the NCAA in sacks. He's got some juice. Let's see what happens. But I wouldn't be stunned if Solomon's inactive, even if he's healthy. But Smoot gives the Bills a much better run presence on the edge, but also he really helps the interior pass rush, because on these third downs where you bring in Von Miller and you have Rousseau on the edge, you had have Ed Oliver, now you have Smoot rushing next to Ed Oliver, and that is a nasty NASCAR package. That's one where you pick your battles if you're the opposing defense or opposing offense, excuse me. And Jacksonville's offensive line is not very strong in the middle. They don't have, in my opinion, the best tackles anyway. But when you want to talk about the Jacksonville Jaguars, Cam Robinson is a guy that I think, maybe kind of like his quarterback, has just gotten paid a lot through his career, but I don't know that he's ever been great. And he's a guy that's banged up coming into this game. He's questionable. Doug Peterson did say he was going to play, but that's a matchup that I think the Bills should be able to take advantage of. On the other side of him, Anton Harrison is a draft pick I liked, but he has not been great thus far in his career. And I'd be curious if, given the way that Rousseau has looked, given the way Von Miller has looked, if they really leave him one-on-one too much. Brenton Strange is their backup tight end. He's a former second round pick. This is not just some throwaway player. He's a very good athlete. He's a guy that can factor into the passing game. I don't know how much of a downgrade he is from Evan Ingram, to be honest with you. Evan Ingram is a great receiver, but as an overall tight end, I think Brenton Strange is just fine for them. I think he's a guy that you could see stay in the block and chip and help out with Anton Harrison and Cam Robinson, if he's, you know, lumbering around out there at all, to really help with some of this Bills pass rush. Because you look in the middle where they have Brandon Scherff and they have Urza Cleveland, those guys are replacement level players in my mind. And that's a matchup that Ed Oliver has to win. I really think this Bills defensive line has a massive advantage in this game against the Jaguars offensive line. And unlike when the Bills play against Tua, which they got to, you know, they did fine against Tua, but Tua gets rid of the ball so quick. And Kyler Murray is so elusive back there that you have to take advantage. You have to keep that in mind. Trevor Lawrence is a guy you can get to. And Trevor Lawrence is not necessarily a guy that is going to get rid of the ball very quickly. In fact, he's very inefficient on throws of less than 2.5 seconds. That is a weakness of his game. Ranks among the worst in the league in those throws. Trevor Lawrence is a guy that's already been sacked 7 times this season. 7 times. That's a lot. 51% completion percentage for Trevor Lawrence so far. It's not going well. Early, small sample size. But this is a matchup. I think the Bills can get Trevor Lawrence to the ground a couple times in this game. And sacks, you know, those can be the ultimate drive killers. It's hard to keep moving forward when you go backwards 10 yards. You know, that's where you just have to hope for a penalty at that point in time. Let's flip it around. The Jaguars have a very good defensive line. We all know who their stud is. Josh Hines Allen. He did add the Hines this offseason. I don't know the story behind that, but I think it's a fantastic marketing strategy. Because I've been doing this show long enough to tell you that when I want to do research on the Jags, if I come in to Google, say, and I search Josh Allen Jaguars, I get like 10 articles of how Josh Allen, our quarterback, played against the Jaguars and pictures of our Josh Allen throwing passes against random Jaguars players. Josh Allen, our quarterback, is a mega, mega star in this league. Josh Allen, the defensive end, is a star in this league. He is obviously a very, very good player, but, you know, quarterbacks get treated differently. So adding the Hines in there is a good way to differentiate himself from maybe the second most marketable player in the sport. That's neither here nor there. Trayvon Walker on the other side, a very high pick of the Jaguars, first overall pick in the 2022 draft, is a good player. He's starting to come into his own a little bit. He really impacted that Miami game. And I think he's a player that could give Spencer Brown some fits on the left side. That's going to be an interesting matchup because, you know, Spencer Brown got the money. Tremendous athletic matchup on that side. Deion Dawkins is going to have his hands full with Hines Allen. But Spencer Brown versus Walker could be the matchup that really decides this game. Because, you know, the Bills don't like leaving in players to block. They like to send out five receivers because when you have five receivers, it's just more options for Josh Allen to throw to. They don't have a really good pass blocking back, and their tight ends they view as receivers. So as long as Spencer Brown and Deion Dawkins can hold their own, I think the Bills are going to opt to have the five eligible receivers out there. I think we're in for a Dalton Kincaid game. I think when you look around the league, up until week two, you saw a lot of tight ends struggling. And then in week three, a lot of tight ends went off. I don't know why that is. But what I can tell you is the cream usually rises to the top. And I just think we're due for a Dalton Kincaid game. Now, I'd be doing you all a disservice if I was just like, oh, he's due for it. Just take my word for it. No, there's reasons within this matchup that I also really like Kincaid. He's a moving chess piece. And when you look at what the Jaguars have in their back seven, particularly at linebacker and safety, the guys that match up with Kincaid, there are some serious advantages for the Bills to take advantage of. Andre Sisco and Antonio Johnson. I like Antonio Johnson, but neither one of those guys are super strong coverage players at this point in their career. And I was a big Devin Lloyd fan, their linebacker. When he was he a first round pick? Yeah, 27th overall out of Utah. But he's much more of a play forward versus play backwards player. You can really get him off his spot when he's playing in coverage. And then Foye Olukan is a very good chase and tackle player. If you play fantasy football, he's an IDP stud, not a great coverage player. So these are players that you can definitely attack in the passing game. And that's what I expect the Bills to do with Kincaid, with Knox. I think we will see quite a bit of two tight end this game. And then one other point about this Jaguars team that I think is worth mentioning. They play more man defense in two games than any team in the sport. They've played 56% of their snaps in man defense. That is a very high number. But I will tell you, that number is incredibly skewed by what I think was a game plan specific attack of the Miami Dolphins. The Jaguars came into that game trying to man up Hill and Waddle. I don't anticipate that to be the plan. I think we even saw last week after playing 67% man against the Dolphins, which is alarmingly high in 2024. they went back to about 50-50 against Cleveland. And I think it'll even be less than 50-50 against the Bills. There's a couple of reasons why. One, Josh Allen. It is nearly impossible to play man coverage against Josh Allen because everybody in coverage has their back to the quarterback when they're out in coverage, and Josh Allen just has running lanes for days, and we know he'll take them. So what do you do then? Then you have to commit one of your linebackers to spy. That can work. Devin Lloyd's a great athlete. I would think it would be Olukan, but even then, Josh Allen has the athleticism to beat your spy, just like we saw Kyler Murray do against the Bills week one. A spy is not generally the best plan as a primary plan. It's usually better as a catch-you-off-guard plan. And now when you have a spy, you have four guys rushing, and you have a spy. That's five guys dedicated to essentially rushing the passer or containing the passer, and that's less guys you have in coverage. The other thing when you're in man, you tend to have more of a conservative pass rush. The goal is not necessarily to get to Josh Allen as fast as you can. It is to get to him in a controlled manner where you don't let him get outside the pocket, because when he does that, he can run for big chunks of yards. So I would anticipate that this Jaguars team goes more zone heavy this game. Should they go more zone heavy? I think this is a game that sets up very well for Keon Coleman. I think there are matchups for him to win on the outside. Former Bills draft pick Ronald Darby is starting for the Jaguars, and you know, he's a draft pick from 2015. That's a player, a 5'11 player that Keon Coleman certainly has a size advantage on. And then Monteric Brown is another smaller corner, 6 foot, but these are guys that Keon Coleman should be able to take advantage of on the outside. But I would think that this passing game is really going to come down to one, I expect a big Dalton Kincaid game. Two, I do think that Khalil Shakir, we saw it against Miami, is going to be the primary receiver more often than not, because he is a moving chess piece for this Bills team. He can play inside, he can play outside, and Josh Allen certainly has a comfort level with him. I am curious. We haven't seen the Curtis Samuel experience yet. We caught a glimpse of it in the Dolphins game. On the James Cook touchdown, it was a Curtis Samuel fake that really sold the defense and allowed for James Cook to break free for that touchdown. But we really haven't seen what we thought would be a committed effort to either A, get Curtis Samuel the ball in space, B, hand him the ball, or really just throw off the defense with what we thought would be eye candy to Curtis Samuel. And I wonder if that's coming in this game. I mentioned the fact that Cisco and Johnson are starting for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Let's go over this injury report. For the Bills, we know the names. Taron Johnson out, Terrell Bernard out. Taron Johnson, we mentioned, could be back as early as next week. Terrell Bernard probably a couple of weeks away. That's it for the Bills. For the Jaguars, Evan Engram out with a hamstring injury. On Sunday, Jordan Schultz from Fox Sports announced that Darnell Savage, their starting safety, is questionable for the game, but he is not going to play. And that is a massive loss for these Jacksonville Jaguars, who are already without their stud cornerback, Tyson Campbell, who's on injured reserve. That's two big losses for this team and their secondary that the Bills need to be able to take advantage of. After that, we have Cam Robinson. He's questionable with an injury that's a knee injury, but Doug Peterson said that he's going to play. And Tank Bigsby is questionable with a shoulder injury, and we'll see if he's able to go. So I think this is one very much like the first game against the Cardinals. This is one of those games that I think will be a bit of a referendum on the weapons the Bills have assembled. Because you look at this team, the Jaguars, down their best cover corner, Tyson Campbell, down their best safety, Darnell Savage, and a team that at least schematically and personnel-wise does better against the run than the pass in the back seven. This should be a matchup where a good passing offense should be able to eat. Now, there's always wild cards. Perhaps the Jaguars come out and drop eight into coverage and then dare the Bills to run the ball. That would be a wild card. That would be something that's against what they've done in the past. But if that happens, then I would expect the Bills to run the ball, Josh Allen to throw for 150 yards maybe, and the Bills just run to victory. But if all things are equal and the Jaguars play straight up, this is a matchup that a good passing team should be able to take advantage of. And I think we still don't know if this is a good passing team. In the second half against the Cardinals, they sure looked like it, but the Cardinals are not a great pass defense. They didn't need to pass against Miami. Let's not hold that against the Bills. We're not going to sit here and say, well, the pass game struggled against Miami. They had a 3-possession lead in the early third quarter. There was no reason to pass at that point, and they were running all over the Dolphins. This is a game where the Bills might need to pass, and I think there's going to be some games coming up where we still don't know how good the weapons are, but I think it gives us a chance to find out. We know the Bills have been committed to running the ball. They were committed week one against the Cardinals, very committed week two against the Dolphins, game script especially. But is this a run-first team, or is this a team that is going to come into the game with a mindset of, we're going to take it to you, we're going to throw the ball? It looked to me on the first drive against the Dolphins that the Bills were content to come out and be very aggressive. They were moving with tempo. They were throwing the ball, short passes to Kincaid to get him the ball. They went for it on fourth down, and they ultimately threw for a touchdown pass. But as that game played out, several drives into it, I think the Bills started to realize that unless they beat themselves, they weren't going to lose that game. So then they really went down to the run game. I do think that that pass-heavy Bills game is within them. I don't know if it comes out this week, but I think this is an opponent that'll beg for it. This is the kind of opponent you should be able to throw over. And I would not be stunned at all if Josh Allen has a vintage Josh Allen night and what receiver benefits from that. We already mentioned Khalil Shakir. I think Kincaid has a big game. I think you could see a lot of James Cook in the passing game. But to me, I think a lot of us would feel really good if we saw one or two of these receivers really go off. One of them get over 100 yards. Another one, you know, six catches for 60 and a touchdown. Let's see a receiving game that makes sense and that looks like what 2024, nobody's passing, but looks like what modern football is supposed to look like, where multiple people eat. I know their thing is everybody eats, but that doesn't need to mean that only one person eats a game. Can we see everybody eat? Let's see two or three people really get off in this game, and let's see Josh Allen have a lot of yards to show for it. You know, that's like a cherry on top. That's the icing on the cake, but it would be great to see. But ultimately, just get a win. Style points aren't important. It's week three. We've seen a lot of randomness around the league. And the Bills just have to find a way to beat this team. As far as my prediction goes, I am 1-1 on the season. I picked the Bills to beat the Cardinals. I picked the Bills to lose to the Dolphins. I'm 1-1. We're going to get back on the winning ways this week. I'm picking the Bills to win this game. I'm very nervous about what I've seen around the league, but there's three things I really like about this game. One, I love the advantage the Bills have at quarterback. I think Josh Allen is a proven gamer, a proven game changer, and somebody that you can count on. I don't think the Jaguars have that consistently in Trevor Lawrence. Two, I know the Bills are banged up, but I don't know that the Jaguars are equipped to deal with the losses of Savage and Campbell because they didn't have a great pass defense to begin with, and they're really going to be reliant on their front four to wreck this game for the Bills passing game. I am super excited to see how the Bills passing game does against this team. And three, I love the Bills defensive line matchup in this game against the Jaguars offensive line. I think there's matchups to win across the board in this matchup, and the Bills need to get it done. This is a very random league. Don't let the randomness beat you. Leave the randomness to the other teams. Let's all sit back and laugh at the Bucks and laugh at the Browns for losing to random teams while the Bills just come in and put away a team that they're a 5.5-point favorite over. Give me the Bills 31-20. The Bills improved to 3-0 and look ahead to a big, big Sunday Night Football matchup next week against Baltimore. Before I get out of here, though, I want to spin it around the division and kind of take a look at what the landscape is in the AFC East. So let's start with the Dolphins. The Dolphins are a 1-2 football team. They lost today to the Seattle Seahawks, and it was not a good game. Skylar Thompson started the game. He ended up getting hurt. And was it Tim Boyle that came in that game? The Dolphins did not even get an offensive touchdown. And it's not like the Seahawks were great. The Seahawks did everything they could early to keep the Dolphins in the game. Multiple turnovers, one right in their end. Kader Kohou had him set up right on the doorstep of the end zone and didn't matter. But the Dolphins fall 24-3. Look, the long and the short of it for the Dolphins as they sit here at 1-2 is it truly just depends how long they have to go without Tua. Because their next few games are super winnable. Next week, they play the Tennessee Titans and Will Levis, who don't look like they can get out of their own way. They got their doors blown off by Malik Willis and the Green Bay Packers today. They've lost a game to Caleb Williams and the Chicago Bears, and there's times where Caleb Williams looks like he can't even complete a forward pass. I feel like that's a game that if the Dolphins get just anything out of their quarterback position, they could and should win. The next week, they're in New England. Did you guys watch that Thursday night game? Jacoby Brissett is a disaster. New England has no offensive weapons. How in the world they beat Cincinnati, I have no idea. But that is certainly a game the Dolphins can win. And then they go to Indy, and Indy has been super up and down. They can't move the ball consistently, and they just survived a pillow fight with the Bears today. The Dolphins can absolutely win one or two of those games. And then you're at the end of the IR stint of Tua. He could be back as soon as that game against the Cardinals. And, you know, they could still have their head above water. But what they got today out of their quarterback won't get it done against anybody. Skylar Thompson was horrendous. The Seahawks had no reason to do anything but defend the run. And it looked like the Dolphins quit. So a tough spot for Mike McDaniel. He looked rattled on the sideline today. You know, if the Dolphins over this stretch of games against the Titans, the Patriots, and the Colts were to go in and drop all three, I mean, that's where your soft part of your schedule is supposed to be. And it might just be too little too late by the time Tua comes back. So we shall see. But, you know, it's super unfortunate when you lose your quarterback. The Patriots, we can spend a little bit of time on. I'm not sure why we need to. They're a 1-2 football team, and they look to me like a team that absolutely is going to be picking in the top five of the draft again. And the only way that that doesn't happen is if they put Drake May on the field and he's instantly excellent. And what have we seen from rookie quarterbacks this year that would make us think Drake May would come in and be instantly excellent? Nothing. So they have no weapons. I like Jalen Polk, but, you know, as far as like consistent proven weapons, they're throwing the ball to Hunter Henry a lot. In 2024, Hunter Henry. So they can't move the ball. Jacoby Brissett is an absolute statue back there with the slowest release in the entire sport. And their offensive line is a mash unit right now. So the Patriots are not a team that should threaten Bills in any manner. So that just leaves one team, the New York Jets. The Jets got we'll call it a big win. The Jets are 2-1, and you could make the argument, especially after today, when what we saw out of Denver, that the Jets' two wins were against the two worst teams in the AFC, the Patriots and the Titans. If you want to still include Denver in that, their next game is against Denver. So the Jets are going to get fat on a bad schedule. We knew this going in. The third place versus first place schedule can play an advantage, but this year it really felt like it played an advantage. And while the Jets are going to play Denver, at some point the Bills are going to play the Chiefs. Outside of that, though, the advantage we thought the Jets had in the schedule may not be as strong as we thought coming into the year. Coming into the year, while the Bills were playing the Lions, the Jets got to play the Vikings with Sam Darnold at quarterback. That's a layup. Well, not a layup anymore. The Vikings look as good as anybody. Sam Darnold looks really good. And then you look at the NFC South, while the Bills have to play. Let me think about this for a second. The Bills in the NFC south, right? Am I thinking? Okay, stop guessing. Just look it up. We're doing this live. The Bills also play the... Oh, excuse me. NFC North. I just said that one. So then it also comes down to the AFC North. The Bills play the Ravens. The Jets play the Steelers. Well, look, that's to me, that's still an advantage, okay? I know the Steelers are 3-0 with Justin Fields not having to throw the football forward, but at some point that's going to come back to bite them. And I'd still 10 times out of 10 rather play the Steelers than the Ravens. And we'll find out next week. The Bills play the Ravens coming up here pretty quickly. But when you look at this Jets schedule, the NFL didn't do them a lot of favors. So they start off on Monday Night Football against the Niners, right? So they immediately go into week two on short rest against the Titans. Week three, they have short rest against the Patriots. It's Thursday Night Football. So there's 2 out of 3 short rest games. And then they get long rest to play the Broncos next week at home. That's pretty sweet. And then they fly to London to play the Vikings. And then they fly back from London, no bye week, to play the Bills on Monday Night Football before having a, you guessed it, a short rest game going to Pittsburgh. So NFL didn't do them a lot of favors. So I think that while their schedule looks easy, I still think there's reason to be a little concerned about the Jets. I'm not overly impressed with their defense just yet. But Titans kind of exposed them a little bit if they hadn't just thrown up all over themselves. And I feel like any defense that can just take the field would have done what they did to the Patriots with their offensive line situation. So I need to see more from the Jets. And I won't be convinced if they go out and they shut down Bo Nix. Like, it really will come down to that Vikings game in London and then the Bills before I really start to believe in this team. But hey, you have enough games coming up where you play the Patriots again. You get to play the Colts. You get to play the Seahawks. You get to play the Rams. Who knows what kind of form they're in? The Jets can pile up enough wins. It doesn't matter if I'm impressed. It just matters how many wins you get. But I think it's very TBD with the Jets right now. One last thing I want to get into before I get out of here. A lot of talk about what Mel Kiper said. Too high coverage. And how it should be banned from the NFL. That was ridiculous. That I'm a Mel Kiper fan, but that was insanity that he actually said that out loud for people to hear. This idea that too high coverage is some kind of a new concept that teams are developing is like, oh man, why didn't we think of that when the Patriots had Randy Moss? We could have stopped them with too high. No. Too high coverage is part of what's happening here. But the larger point here is defenses have been built to stop the pass because offensive has been going to spread. The college systems have infiltrated the NFL, and you've seen way more spread offense. You've seen way more 3 and 4 wide receiver sets. And it's a lot of college concepts where it's short passes, catch and run, and then when they come up, you throw deep. Okay. What has happened, in my opinion, is the NFL has started to finally catch up to how to stop the spread offense that's come in from college. And what you are seeing is the quarterbacks that the last couple years looked really efficient are struggling. Jalen Hurts, Tua, and pretty much all the rookies. Why were rookies able to just come in and hit the ground running? Because they could simplify the system. One read. Here's your throw. Let me scheme this guy open for you. Thank you very much. Defenses have caught up to it. You can't just scheme open throws in the NFL nonstop. So these guys are going to have to come up with a counterattack. That's why I think we're seeing these rookie quarterbacks struggle so mightily. I still think Caleb Williams, boy, it's rough right now. I don't even know if I want to finish that sentence, but I still want to believe in Caleb Williams. I think Jaden Daniels is a hell of a football player. I like Drake May. I like Bo Nix. I like Michael Penix Jr., who, to his credit, has not taken the field yet, unless I'm missing something in the Sunday night game. But I think that's a large reason why these rookie quarterbacks are struggling, is the simplified systems that have been kind of babying these guys into the league are no longer working against NFL defense. They've caught up. They know how to take away these easy reads that you're creating for them. What else you got? Tua looked lost against the Bills before he got injured. You know, does Tua regain that? He looked terrible against the Jaguars for much of that game. Does Tua regain that, or is he a guy that was taking advantage of the NFL not quite catching up with the system yet, and now they've caught up? We shall see. It's a larger conversation. It's fascinating because it's cyclical, and defenses will catch up. For years, we saw defenses draft 220-pound linebackers or not even take linebackers in the first round because I need guys who can cover. All these teams have three or four wide receivers. I need coverage guys. I need pass rushers. Forget linebackers. The Eagles, for the longest time, are like, forget linebackers. But I think it's starting to come back around now, and teams are realizing that when my opponent has nothing but nickel players out there, and they're all, you know, even in their heaviest sets, the heaviest players at the linebacker core, 220, maybe 230, like, let's load up the box and run the ball right at them. Let's see if they can stop it. I think that's a big part of it. And these defenses are smart enough now to realize, like, we're going to make you earn your touchdowns. No more free shots. No more cheap ones. So, you know, it's early. The offensive play callers are the best in the world, but the defensive play callers are the best in the world. Excuse me. And so far, through 2.5 weeks, the defensive play callers have been ahead of the offensive play callers. It's fascinating to see. I don't think the Bills are a great running team. I think they're a good enough running team that have a superstar quarterback that defenses are afraid of. So I don't predict that the Bills could just waltz through this season being a power running team and win 13 games. There's going to be plenty of times where they need Josh Allen. And I think when the January games roll around and they're seeing the Chiefs or the Ravens, it's going to go back to, hey, Josh, carry us, bud. So we'll see, but I'm fascinated by it. I consider myself to be kind of an NFL historian. What we're seeing here is unpredictable, a little bit unprecedented, but it's interesting, right? Like, didn't it feel like the last couple of years that defense was almost an afterthought? Like, you get to the Super Bowl and the Eagles have this great defensive line and, you know, the Chiefs have some studs on defense and you're just like, okay, which team's going to score 50? It feels like as long as you have a good offense, the defense doesn't matter. And that's not the case right now. And it's kind of exciting. The running game matters again. That's kind of interesting. It stinks for people like me who, you know, get wrapped up in daily fantasy and fantasy football and think that they can predict what's going to happen. And then all of a sudden the Browns go out there and lose to the Giants and the Broncos go out there and beat the Bucks. But it's just fascinating to watch the sport evolve. I love it. But what I love more is when the Bills win. And tonight, we need a Bills win. My prediction, 31-20, the Bills beat the Jaguars. Excuse me, I got a little cough in my throat. I'll be back tonight at halftime for Bills Chat Halftime Show. No matter what's going on, come in, hang out with me. Let's talk about what's going on in the game. And then Luca and I will be back next week after Bills Ravens to break down that game. We'll see if we throw something together post-game for this Jaguars game, just to get something up on YouTube. We shall see, but we're definitely going to be back next week post-game for the Ravens show. Feel better, Luca. I am Josh McCarty. We will talk to you next week on Bills Chat.